I'm your only friend. I'm not your only friend, but I'm a little glowing friend. But really, I'm not actually your friend, but I am your friend. It's time for the SAFTAcast, the only podcast that talks to writers, editors, and publishers about everything except writing, editing, or publishing. I'm your host, Scott C. Hi, folks. It has been a while, I know, but hey, November got really crazy. This fall has just been crazy overall for many of us, and including yours truly here. But we are returning right now. I hope all of you listening have had a good Thanksgiving, no matter what you do to celebrate it, and you're enjoying your weekend, maybe chilling, relaxing, whatever you're doing right now. I hope you're enjoying it. And we thank you for tuning in to another episode of the SAFTAcast. Episode 64 is here. Now, we got some interesting stuff coming up for you here on the podcast here to close out the year. Let me tell you about what's coming up real quick here. In 2 weeks, it is time for our annual holiday music show. This is something we've been doing ever since we started the program. Every December, we like to talk about holiday music, and this year is no different. In 2 weeks, we'll be looking ahead to the year 2017, and that's the only hint I'm going to give you about this year's music list. Then, right before the most prominent of all December holidays, Christmas indeed, a special episode of the SAFTAcast is in works, and we're working on some of the final arrangements for it, but we're hoping that a couple friends of ours of the program might be joining us to discuss, roundtable style, the 20th anniversary of a special holiday classic. Again, I'm keeping some things close to the chest and not going to tell you about it. But speaking of holidays, they are upon us right now. And I, of course, like many, have gift suggestions for you. And the gift I want to suggest to you is something from the Sundress Publications store. There are many things that you can do with money on that site. One of them is to donate to Firefly Farms to help out with resident application fees who may want to come and work on their projects there. You can sponsor a writer. You can name a chicken. You can also purchase note cards that feature some of our most beloved animal friends at the farm. You can buy bumper stickers. And, of course, when you've got a name like Sundress Publications, you know that you can purchase books. And books are a great Christmas gift for virtually any person. Give the gift of literature, of contemporary poetry and prose. One I recommend from the 2016 catalog of Sundress Publications is Sweets for the Modern Dancer by Jill Corey. It is a most excellent read. I recommend it highly, and you can find that, of course, as I said, at the sundresspublications.com. Click on store. And while you're on the store, don't forget that there is some free stuff as well at Sundress. We have a bunch of free downloadable e-chaps. These are free poetry chapbooks in PDF form that you can curl up with when the weather turns cold and just chill. And I'll give you a recommendation for this as well. One I personally love is When I Was a Girl by Jennifer Jackson Berry. I have taught this to students because I think it's an amazing read for anyone who recalls growing up in the 1980s or who just recalls the awkwardness of being a teenager. And speaking of growing up in the 1980s and free e-chaps, one that kind of crosses both lines there you can check out is also The One Where I Ruin Your Childhood by Dan Crocker, who happens to be our guest this week. Now, here on the program, if you listen to us quite a bit, you might note that I almost always offer an open invite to our guests to come on back whenever they want, and Dan Crocker got in touch with us and said, "Hey, it's been a while. I'd like to chat with you again and catch up." And I said, "That sounds like a great idea. Let's shoot for Thanksgiving time, because that's a great time to reconnect with family and old friends." And that's exactly what we do on the program today, as Dan and I get into talking about some of the nerddoms of 2016 and things we saw and things we witnessed and what we're kind of looking forward to coming up here in television and movies. But we also have some serious discussions about raising children, gallows humor, and mental illness, among many other things. Truly, this is a great interview to enjoy, and so now, kick back and enjoy it, but first, well, actually, you know what? I was gonna say, but first, here's the theme song, but you know what? Let's throw up the audio decorations a little bit early, and switch over to our annual holiday theme song. We'll be right back.
It's probably easier on my computer, which is not great.
And that way we can sit around in our underwear, you know?
True, true.
We all have our body image issues. I look at myself and I'm like, I am far too thin.
Oh my God, see, you're perfect as far as I'm concerned. My goal is to be as skinny as the guy from The Black Crow, Chris Robinson.
My goal is just to weigh more than 150 pounds. I was always told, you know, oh, you'll gain weight when you get older, you'll gain weight when you get married. No, it doesn't work for me.
Well, maybe everybody wants what they don't have. I don't know. Because I gain weight very easily, and I would rather not.
If we can continue kind of in a similar vein real quick, let's kick this off with the burning question that is on everyone's mind right now.
All right.
What is your go-to Thanksgiving recipe?
My go-to Thanksgiving recipe? Wow, that's a good question. You know, I cook a lot. I probably cook 5 days a week, but I don't think I've ever cooked Thanksgiving dinner.
Really?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll make the potato salad if we're having that, which is simple. Anybody can do it. But yeah, usually my mom cooks, and everybody goes to her house, and she's a very good cook.
What do you usually do for Thanksgiving in terms of food?
Turkey.
So standard.
Yeah, I'm a turkey junkie, so I'm happy about that.
Do you do it in any special way, or is it just, you know, pop it in the oven, when it's done, it's done?
Oh, I don't know. My mom cooks it in some kind of gigantic slow cooker thing, so it's real tender when it's done. It's delicious.
Nothing like rosemary or brine in there or anything?
I don't know what she does.
Generally, same traditional sides then as well?
Yeah, some dressing, some sweet potatoes, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. Broccoli casserole.
The big question then becomes, what is dessert?
Oh, man. My favorite is pecan pie.
And thank you for pronouncing it correctly.
You're welcome.
I'm from the North. We do say pecan.
Oh, dear God.
I had to relearn that. My wife was like, that pecan is the outside toilet, you know. I don't know how to pronounce it right. Are there any traditions you have for Thanksgiving? Do you, you know, is there a specific thing you watch?
Well, we used to play a lot of Canasta. We don't do that as much anymore, but games are always nice. Yesterday, with my immediate family, we played Cards Against Humanity, which is always fun. Not something I'd play with my mother, probably.
Like who? Your aunts, uncles, children?
Oh, the kids, yeah. They're pretty much grown now, so.
So they can handle it now.
Yeah, now they're 23 and 20, and their sense of humor is even more warped than mine, so.
Is it hard to believe that they're that old now?
In some ways, it's hard to believe. It seems like it went by very quickly. In other ways, it seemed like it took a very long time.
I'm spoken very much like a parent there.
But it's that they're adults. It's fun. You can talk about things, you know?
Like what? You know, what's the difference between them as adults and, say, them as teenagers?
Well, I grew up in a family that didn't do a lot of talking about serious things, you know. We would just kind of ignore them. So I never wanted to do that with my girl, so just anything. Why is Dad sitting on the couch with a pillow on his head like a hat for 2 hours? That might be something that comes up.
So you're very, very open and free with them, then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what else can you do?
See, I don't know, without any children to speak of that I know of. I don't know. I'm curious.
I mean, you could try to pretend everything's okay all the time, but kids aren't stupid. And like me, they tend to handle adversity with humor, so it's fun. We'll just riff on to something, you know.
What are some of the more fun riffs that you've had, then?
Oh, God. I don't. It gets pretty cutthroat around here when it comes to roasting each other, I guess.
They can dish it out as much as they can take it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Probably dish it out more than I can. I get to a point where, hey, that's too mean to say about one of my own kids, but they never get to that point when it comes to me, Scott.
That must have been a trip for you to kind of deal with.
Well, yeah, but I love it. I mean, I always wanted a family that talks to each other, and that's what I've gotten. I'm happy with it.
So you're still very, very close with your children, even though they are technically adults and on their own in a way.
Oh, well, calling them on their own is a stretch. They're right upstairs right now eating my food.
Well, they're 21, 23, technically. You know, they're adults, but, you know, So that's awesome. You have that relationship with them. Was that something that you really worked for to have with them?
Yes. Like I said, growing up, my family never talked about anything. And I didn't want that. It's no fun. Because then if something serious really does happen, you do need help. You don't feel like you can talk to your parent, you know.
Kind of isolated, yeah.
But they were the 50s type, we don't talk about our feelings, you know.
What did you do different? Like, how did you work to break that cycle, so to speak, of silence?
Well, for one, I couldn't help it because their mother comes from a family where people just let it all hang out. So it was probably going to happen no matter what I did.
Was there anything special that you did, though?
Yeah, for example, I've been pretty open with them about mental health things. I mean, what else can you do? You come home from new medicine and all of a sudden you're having much less anxiety. You can't just hide that.
So part of it is being honest with them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, obviously, there are probably things I did in my misspent youth I'd never tell my kids about. But as far as emotional honesty, of course, yeah.
I won't dare ask you about the things that you did, then. Yeah, in case they listen to this, I don't want them to find out here.
Hey, you must be excited about the Mystery Science Theater 3000 comeback.
I am, actually. I'm very excited about it. Little anxious, but excited overall. I've been keeping track of it.
I'm looking forward to it myself. I'm not the kind of fan that you are, or my friend James Brubaker is a big fan too, but I do really enjoy it.
Surprise! I would say that arguably that show has had the greatest impact on me, you know, any TV show.
So. You mean comedically?
Comedically, but also sensibility.
Well, that was going to be my question. Did it fit your comedic sensibility, or was your comedic sensibility influenced by the show?
I want to say it was both. In the mid-90s, when it was on and I first saw the show, there was not the nerd pop culture that we have now.
Oh, you don't have to remind me, brother.
So I'm watching this show, and here are people who are nerds, and they're smart, and they're funny, and they're on TV. So it became sort of a role model to look at and go, wait, it's okay to be smart. It's okay to be nerdy about things. Because look, here they made it.
You make a very good point, yeah. When I was a kid, we didn't have podcasts or safe spaces for nerds. You got beat up by some dude named Cletus.
Dare I ask if that happened to you?
No.
Well, he wasn't named Cletus.
Yeah, he wasn't. His name wasn't Cletus. But it might as well have been.
So you were a nerd from childhood, pretty much?
I was a nerd from childhood. I was a little fat kid that, I would go to work as a dishwasher at 15 or whatever, and my check I would spend on comic books. But then from about 19 to, I don't know, mid-20s, I tried to hide my nerdness. I don't know why. I just thought, hey, I'm going to be a writer now. Let's forget the nerdy things. It didn't work very well.
What made you break out of it and say it's okay?
I don't think I had a choice. These were just things I liked. I couldn't help it.
Did you seek out people who also shared it, or was it just they gravitated to you, or what happened?
I don't think I sought out people, but if you're out and you meet someone and they got the same nerdy interest that you do, I mean, it's a good basis to have something to talk about, and maybe you'll become friends. If you're out and you meet someone, or I meet someone, and they're talking about monster trucks, I'm not that interested. Nothing against monster trucks, but I'm probably not going to keep the conversation going.
So you eventually deciding then not to, hide the nerdom anymore. How did that feel to finally just, shed that and go, like, I don't need to hide this anymore?
Well, by then, there was no danger in being a nerd anymore. It's safe to be a nerd now. Well, and also there's this mean section of the nerd community I never knew existed. I mean, the Gamergate guys. Like, those weren't my nerd friends in school. The nerd friends I had were very empathetic towards women or anyone else because they knew what it was like to be mistreated.
What happened? That's something I've wondered about, really, is the nerd community. Is that there's, like, one half that's really cool and chill, and then there's this subsection that's just assholes.
I don't know. Have they always been there and we just didn't know before the internet? Or is this a new thing? Yeah, that's a good question.
What do you think? Have they always been there?
I think so. But I think with social media, like anything else, it's grown and magnified. Because maybe someone has a little bit of anger about being a nerd and, you know, no girl ever talks to me or some stupid shit like that. And then they find somebody on the internet that's also mad about this thing, and they form this group, and they just sit around being mad all the time.
And it amplifies from there.
Yeah.
I wonder how many are posers, then. Yeah, if they're trying to fit in with the other assholes. I don't know.
Yeah, still cool, maybe. I don't know. How could you grow up watching the original Star Trek, for example, or Doctor Who, and not have some kind of enlightened, empathetic worldview that moves beyond your inner circle or your immediate life? I don't understand it.
Or comic books. Or just,
that's true, yeah.
I mean, Star Trek gives this vision of a possible future where things work.
Yeah.
Why are you fighting against that possibility if that's what you love? So you grew up a bit of a nerd then. How did it all start? Like, what are some of your earliest memories of kind of nerddom for you?
I liked to read when I was young, and, you know, a good fantasy novel is right about at the, if you're a good reader, a good fantasy novel is right about, how do I put this? The reading level you should be reading at, I guess. It's a little bit challenging, but it's also fun. You can get through one in a week or less. So probably my nerddom started with reading, even before Star Trek or any kind of movies or whatever.
What were some of the fantasy stories that you were reading as a child then?
Oh my God, I would grab whatever I could at the flea market. Some of them good, some of them not. You know Piers Anthony?
I've heard the name, yeah.
Oh dear God, I read all those awful books as a kid, all those Xanth books. Lord of the Rings I eventually found, of course. Who doesn't if you're into fantasy? Oh, the Dragon Rider series, all that stuff.
Where did it go from there, then? That's when you started... Is that about the time that you started seeing Star Trek, Doctor Who, etc. on TV?
My best friend, Glenn, he was also a nerd. We liked the monkeys. We bonded over that, and we bonded over the original Star Trek. And then just having a smart kind of friend for the first time in my life, we would watch Star Trek or Doctor Who and talk about it like nerds do into the wee hours of the morning. And that just, you know, you felt part of a community.
It was safety in numbers kind of thing.
Yeah.
I can totally relate. You know, finding that specific group in high school to protect you, basically. Thank you, 7th grade Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, my God. 7th grade Dungeons & Dragons were some of the best nights of my life. I got one of my first dates based on Dungeons & Dragons.
Really?
Yeah, because my friend Matt's sister, Alicia, would come down and play every once in a while. And our character started flirting. And then we went out on a date, and I was horribly awkward, and we never went out on another date.
Well, first dates, you know, especially first dates overall in life are fairly awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
But has D&D brought more love into your life then, since?
Oh, God, no, Scott. Dear God, no. Has it yours?
No. It's brought up a lot of laughter, but no, I can't think of... I don't even think I have a first date story from D&D.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky for that one. Look, I loved role playing, man. Like, and I like you, I got into it and I was good at it, and I chose choices my character would choose, not that I necessarily would choose.
I wonder how many writers and poets and such start out with Dungeons and Dragons.
I have to imagine a lot, and if it's not Dungeons and Dragons, it's something that gets you lost in your imagination when you're young.
Because we're just so full of the imagination and storytelling that, yeah, I'd love to see a group of writers play D&D. I think that would be... We should lobby to have that at AWP, I think.
Oh, that would be pretty awesome.
You know, D&D caucus. Kind of like at Dragon Con. We just have a D&D game with writers going on in another room, you know?
I think that would be pretty fun.
Let's start a petition for that. Let's see if we can get that on the AWP like 2018 docket in Florida or something. I guarantee there'll be at least 3 or 4. I'll jump in on that, hell yeah. So, you know, naturally you go from the fantasy stories into Dungeons & Dragons and starting to watch TV and such. How is it today for you? Do you still keep up with nerd things, or is it much harder now?
Well, it's much harder because I've got a job. But I still keep up with what I can. I love Westworld. I'm really getting into that. I rewatch the complete Battlestar Galactica reboot about once a year. I don't keep up with comic books so much anymore. It's so expensive now. Hard to justify, especially if you're buying 10 titles a month or something.
Yeah, they're about $4 a piece now or something.
Yeah.
It's gotten harder, too, with comics. You miss one issue, you're screwed. But do you keep up with, like, the Marvel movies and such?
Oh, of course, yeah. I watch all of those. And I keep up with comics to some extent. Like, I might get a... if there's a really good storyline, and, you know, later they put it on a perfect bound little book that's got all the comics collected, I'll get that.
Recommendation, if I may. Apparently there's also a Deadpool collection where he goes up against Moby Dick and a few other classic literature. I have to check that out.
Just with how good that movie was?
I have my issues with it.
Problems with it.
What were your issues with Deadpool, the movie?
Oh, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah, it was funny. It was entertaining. They pushed his sexuality a little bit, but not as much as I would have liked, probably. I mean, it is Deadpool.
Are there movies, were there any this summer, or, you know, big comic book movies or nerd movies that came out this summer that you really dug?
I'm trying to think of what came out this summer. Help me out here, Scott. What came out this summer?
Batman versus Superman came out.
Oh, I thought that was awful.
Many people did. You're not alone there.
I thought Suicide Squad was awful.
What was bad about that one in your eyes?
Well, you know, Margot Robbie, or Robbie, however you pronounce it, played Harley Quinn. I thought she was great. I thought Will Smith was pretty good. The plot, I got lost in the plot. Like, it was edited together weird or something.
Civil War also came out this year.
Oh, Civil War, I loved.
Just found out it's coming to Netflix in December. I'm like, yay, because I don't go see many first-run movies these days.
So. I thought it was the first time I saw Spider-Man on screen and thought, that's what Spider-Man is.
Really?
Yeah.
Not even the Sam Raimi ones?
I liked those a lot, but there was something missing, and it was Spider-Man being a smartass.
I think those were the big ones that came out. I mean, there were some smaller ones that came out, like ID4, 2, you know, Independence Day 2.
Oh, yeah.
That came out. What else came out this summer? Oh, the reboot of Ghostbusters came out.
You know, I thought it was okay. I was really hoping that it was awesome, so that all those fanboys, like we were talking about earlier, would shut the fuck up. But it was okay.
It is on my to-watch list as well. I have not gotten to it yet. And I have nothing against it. I just haven't gotten around to it. I do want to see it, though, because, you know, I like the cast, who they cast, and I think that's a great cast.
Yeah.
So coming back a little bit in our conversation, do your kids share the same nerd interests, or if they found their own, or are they just, completely, no, I'm not even going near that stuff?
My youngest daughter is a complete and total nerd. And we like a lot of the same stuff, but we differ on some things, too. She's more into some anime stuff than I am. But, you know, she grew up on Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! My oldest daughter, she's more like her mother. She's not much of a nerd. With nerd movie, like, she'll watch a Marvel movie, but she's not going to go watch the original Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren just because it's fun.
My sympathies. No one should have to sit through that film.
It's a pretty, you know, if you just don't expect it to make sense, then it's all right.
If you have not seen it, I recommend on Netflix the documentary on Canon Films. It's absolutely wonderful. Electric Boogaloo, the story of Canon. Is there a lot of fun in sharing nerddoms with your children?
Oh, yeah, of course. And sometimes the fun is that they don't like it. Like, when they were little... preteen even, they're like, I want to watch a scary movie. And I was like, I'm going to show you the scariest movie, man. Night of the Living Dead, which I find horrifying. And yet, because it was in black and white, they couldn't take it seriously. I'm like, really? You don't see what's horrifying about this movie? It's not the zombies you're worried about, it's the people. No, it's in black and white. It's not scary to me.
I've been
noticing, have you noticed this too? With talking with students, because you're a teacher as well. You have a lot of young students. Have you noticed that they really have a resistance to black and white film?
Yeah, they kind of do. Although, I'll give you this. They loved Marty with Ernest Borgnine. Was interesting. They thought it was a sweet, well-done movie. I invented a game that involved Ernest Borgnine.
Okay.
Do you know the game Would You Rather?
Yeah.
It's like that, except one of the choices is always Ernest Borgnine.
Okay, now my brain just broke, I think.
So the key is you've got to think of someone who's worse than Ernest Borgnine.
Hey, kids! My real knowledge of Ernest Borgnine is that one Simpsons episode.
Well, he wasn't a handsome fella.
He was charming.
Oh, yeah.
Not necessarily handsome. You know, let's get a little serious here for a moment. You mentioned earlier about mental health issues and bringing them up with your show. Now, recently you posted an article on WeWantInsanity.com that you talk a lot about and very open about it.
Well, yeah. How to put this? For as much as anxiety as I have, when it comes down to it, I don't like to be silent about that kind of stuff because there's a lot of misconceptions about mental health. So if you don't talk about it, then those misconceptions will always be there, if that makes sense.
It does. Where do you think that stigma comes from?
I think part of it is just there's a little fear of mental health because there's a fear of sickness in general. And part of it is, there's no money for mental health. It's hard to get help for it, even if you've got insurance and stuff. In a town like I am, it took me over a month to get an appointment to see someone. And it's just not something we take very seriously.
I wonder why that is, that we don't take it seriously.
Well, I mean, if we got to go back to Reagan, he cut a lot of the funding out. And, I mean, who's likely to not complain a lot? That's probably mentally ill people because they've got a lot of other stuff to worry about. So it's an easy cut in the budget.
So maybe part of it is politics and part of it maybe something else, like cultural.
Oh, I definitely think there's something cultural, yeah. I mean, there's very few movies that represent, for example, bipolar disorder in a realistic sort of way. It's gotten better, like everything. It's gotten a little better media-wise, but you still see a lot of stuff with a real honest kind of look at it.
Are there any out there that do show a kind of an honest look at, say, bipolar disorder?
I really loved Silver Linings Playbook, but in the end, let's face it, there's a dance off, and then everyone's happy. I mean, it doesn't tie up in a neat bow like that.
It's been a long time since I've seen Girl Interrupted, for example. I don't remember exactly what was the condition in that without, pulling up Wikipedia or something. But I do remember a lot of people saying that was a fairly accurate portrayal.
It's been so long since I've seen that. It may have been.
I don't know offhand. But, you know, of course, you know, coming back to your article and everything, you seem to be dealing with it right now.
Well, yeah, it was kind of amazing. I finally got on a mood stabilizer and everything came into focus. That's not to say everything is perfect. This is still new. There's going to be some dosage adjustments and whatnot. But, oh my God, it was like a miracle.
How have your children dealt with it, too, watching it?
By just letting some things that might be weird normally just kind of slide. For example, if you've just got to lay down in bed for a couple hours and try to clear your mind, we just let it go around here. That's what's going on. Dad has to lay down for a couple hours and clear his mind a little bit.
It's all good. Well, I'm glad that, you know, you've been... Let me say, I'm very glad that you've been very open about this. And now, as you were saying, there has been a stigma against it, especially with writers, I think.
Well, I mean, there's this myth that being mentally ill makes you more creative or something, which is just not true. I will say that, like, a little bit of mania, like when you're first cycling up, is good for your creativity because you've got energy to do it. You're like, hey, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write, it's going to be great. It's probably not going to be great, but at least you sat down and did something, and later on you can fix it. But otherwise, no, I mean, I don't think there's a connection between creativity and craziness. Except, well, maybe you look at the world differently sometimes.
But I do thank you for being, you know, open and honest, and who knows, that could inspire someone else to seek out, you know, some help for themselves or realize that they've got something going on in them.
Well, I think that's always the hope with talking about or writing about something like that. It's like, am I exploiting this for a couple of Facebook likes, or do I really think it might help someone else? And if the answer leans toward I think it might be help someone else, then yeah, it's probably worth putting out there.
I'm also glad that you're, in your words, kind of on the road to recovery here and working with it.
Yeah.
I'm glad of that because, you know, I don't know. This is a difficult subject to talk about.
Well, for me too. Like I said, the diagnosis is still pretty new. Apparently, if it goes untreated, it gets worse. It can get worse in your 40s, which is, I think, what happened to me. And yeah, it's scary, though.
It's scary, but there's hope, then, still.
Well, yeah, I think as dark as my humor gets or whatever, I think I'm a pretty optimistic person overall. I believe that human nature is fundamentally good. We just don't show it all the time. But yeah, there's always hope, and
I'm glad to hear it, man, you know, because it is always a joy to talk with you. And no, we're not wrapping up just yet. It just sounded like I was cycling into my end of conversation move there. Beyond the mental health, you know, how are things been? You know, this seems like something silly to ask halfway through the show. But, you know, we haven't talked to you in like 2.5 years here on the program. How have you been?
Things are good. I got a job I like. Things are stable family-wise. Mental health is better than it's been in a long time. Things are good.
Darn it, there's a part of me that's like, I wish there was something that went on that was like horrific so that we could... gallows humor, you know. Well, that's good, man. It's just, it's been a while. You know, we love having our old friends back on the show to catch up with them and chat with them. You know, talking a little bit about movies. Westworld, you recommend that?
I recommend Westworld if you are the kind of person who doesn't need answers right away. If you liked Lost, you'll probably be fine with Westworld.
I'm curious. I've heard a lot of good things. I never saw the original Yul Brynner film.
Well, the original film is kind of good in a corny way. Like, I think you'd like it.
I probably would.
I'm not sure if you'd like it as a film or just like it because it's odd.
Yul Brynner as a cowboy, you know.
Yeah.
What the hey. But, okay, so are there other recommendations you have of things that are out right now to watch?
I always recommend Stranger Things, if no one's seen it yet. Especially old enough to have a little bit of 80s nostalgia.
I was pleasantly surprised by it. I'm looking forward to the second season.
Yeah, me too.
It'll be interesting. Are there anything coming out in the near future that you can that you're looking forward to?
I'm really kind of looking forward to Arrival.
It's like I've been hearing good buzz about that film.
It's gotten some good reviews. I like smart sci-fi, so.
Have you noticed there's been like an increase? You know, you keep an eye out for nerddoms we've been talking about. Have you been noticing an uptick in say quote unquote sci-fi or hard science smart sci-fi?
I think so, yeah, especially on the independent circuit. I've noticed an uptick in interest in science, period. Like, you got these people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, et cetera, who are kind of famous scientists, which is nice.
I haven't seen that in a while. Not since Carl Sagan, really.
That's probably true, yeah.
I mean, you had, like, Bill Nye in the 90s, but he's also still big, and he's got a Netflix series coming out next year.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Bill Nye Saves the World.
I'll have to check it out.
It's looking pretty good. He's got some powerhouses behind the scenes of it. So, anything else? How are you feeling about the new Star Wars film coming out next month?
Oh, I'll go see it. I'm not super excited about it. I don't know why. Maybe because it's a prequel. So I'm hoping I'll go see it without huge hopes and love it.
If I can give my honest opinion here, this may be the film to make me fall back in love.
You think so?
I think it may be. The way it's looking.
You didn't like the last one?
I liked The Force Awakens, but you can't have that film without A New Hope, so it was too much of a retread in places for me.
It was very familiar.
And on one hand, that was good, but still can't get over Starkiller Base. Don't get me wrong, I still love the film, good moments, but I was 5 years old when Jedi came out, so...
Oh, I was 40-something.
Just about the time Lincoln was shot, you know.
Speaking of nerd, let's not get out here without talking about comedy for a little bit.
All right, let's.
Like, who's really doing it for you these days?
Leslie Jones on Twitter, I think, is fantastic.
Yeah?
She is fun to keep up with. I'm really starting to... Yeah, I'm glad Dave Chappelle is coming back. Really worried about him for a while.
Yeah, I thought his SNL monologue was pretty good.
Seeing
his new specials.
Yeah, he just signed for a three show on Netflix. Should be really good. Carmen Esposito. I may be mispronouncing her name, but I'm just liking what she's out there doing as well. There's a lot of good young comics out there that are really just starting to kill it.
That's true, yeah.
Aziz, I'm not forgetting his last name, but Master of None, very good.
I really like that.
And I'm trying to think, there's a few more. a lot of the people that, say, the Daily Show and Larry Wilmore had brought on, these young comedians are just killing it out there, in my opinion.
You know, I really liked Larry Wilmore's show. I was sad to see it go.
It's
a little awkward, but I thought he got into his groove there by the end, for sure. And, just didn't make it.
I felt like it was 6 months away from breaking out. You know, a couple of months, it was like on the edge of breaking and hitting it.
I agree, yeah.
I wonder if that's a problem with TV right now, is we don't give shows long enough of a chance.
Well, I think that's definitely true.
Did you
watch Louis C.K.'s Horace and Pete?
No, I have not.
It's very good. I wouldn't call it a comedy.
I'm torn on Louis C.K. On one hand, I like Louis. It's like Curb Your Enthusiasm light. But yeah. I have issues with him as a person in some respects.
Like how so?
Well, from the reports I've heard of him and how he treats women and how he treats young comics backstage, he's a bit of an ass.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit of that.
It's that struggle that I've always faced of separating the artist from the art.
Yeah, it gets difficult.
Most of the musicians I love have done reprehensible things, morally, yeah. Ones that I cannot agree with, but how do I go on loving them? That's a big question.
Well, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, I've found.
Where do you draw the line?
It has to be different for everyone, I assume.
Are there artists or writers that have crossed that line for you?
Well, I mean, this is probably going to be a shock to most people. David Allan Coe. If you like country music, you might have grew up listening to some of his songs, and you're like, I love these songs. And then later you find out he's this horrible, homophobic, sexist, prick, racist. And, yeah, it just ruined everything of his to me.
Early days of MP3s, the secret code tapes that were, he said, oh, I did them as a joke. No, you didn't.
Yes, no, that's not a joke.
No. I'm not even going to, if anybody wants to look it up, you look it up on your own. I'm not going to talk about it.
But. Yeah, no, it's not worth even Googling.
No.
It's awful.
Just like read his Wikipedia page, I'm sure it's listed there.
But yeah, it's an example where someone's personal views, I couldn't even consider their art after that.
I struggle with that myself and remind myself that at least a couple of the songs he wrote, or at least a couple of his hits, were not written by him.
So, yeah, that's true.
Okay. It was Dickie Goodman who wrote, if I remember right, dang it, the greatest country song ever.
Oh, John Prine and Steve Goodman.
Steve Goodman, not Dickie Goodman. Dickie Goodman's a novelty artist. Yeah, Steve Goodman and John Prine, uncredited, wrote that. Yeah. So I take at least some comfort in that, but I know what you're talking about. What about famous writers? I know you're a scholar of the Beat Generation and such. Are there any of the famous ones that kind of, you know, cross that line of morality for you?
Well, the thing with the Beat Generation mostly is that they sometimes did, but were also sometimes very enlightened. So for them, you've got to give it a little bit of a product of the times, I guess. They were trying to be enlightened. They weren't always, but they were. There wasn't. It's not. But there wasn't malice in their heart, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Like, I mean, there might come a time where people will look back at us and we think we're a very enlightened people, and they will think, well, they still ate meat back then or something. I don't know.
20, 30 years when millennials take over, they're going to look at some of the things we're talking about and be like, what the heck were they so worried about?
Yeah. the hardest thing to come to terms with the Beat Generation is probably the sexism, which there definitely is in there. But you also got to take into account what Gregory Corso said, which is that there were female Beats. There were females that we were friends with who were trying to do the same kind of stuff that we did, but their parents put them in mental homes because they were female. And so their voices were kind of silenced. But if you were a male, you could get away. Now, I don't know how much of that was Gregory Corso just talking shit and how much is true, but...
Maybe we need to reevaluate that era, then, of writing.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I love Ginsberg, and I'll always love Ginsberg. I understand if people have problems with him, though.
Yeah, he was my major figure in college, so... Yeah, I can see the issues with him. Not every... I've had students ask me, it's like, is he indefensible? I'm like, no, you can tear him apart all you want.
Well, yeah.
He's not bulletproof by any means in his work. Lots going on, though. Lot to look forward to in the culture here and such. The holiday season has begun, of course. And before I wrap this up, I got to ask you, what do you have any holiday traditions that you do every year?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a specific Christmas one since that's coming up.
I was just about to ask, it's like, what, you know, are there specific films or something or TV shows that you have this required holiday viewing?
Yeah, we've always got to sit down and watch The Christmas Story. Personally, I've at least got to watch once It's a Wonderful Life. Sometimes I watch that one alone. But it's the only movie that consistently brings a tear to my eye, is It's a Wonderful Life. At the end, when he's the richest man in town, come on. Kills me. God, it kills me.
I can understand. I cried the first time I saw it, but I'm going to – you can hurt me for this one. I'm going to go on record and say I think it's overrated.
Oh, come on.
It is.
It's cheap. I'll give you that much, but it's the corniness that I kind of like about it.
Maybe it's just that it's been done so much since that it's hard for me to accept the original anymore.
It's been parodied a lot.
And remade at least twice. I think it's the Marlo Thomas version in the 70s.
Oh, God, yeah.
There was that TV one with the heartthrob. There was the one with Mara Wilson. No, it was Miracle on 34th Street. Anyway. But we could sit here and argue It's a Wonderful Life for a while. Maybe I need to see it again. I don't know. But anyway, Crocker, before we let you go, you know, one, you've got a semi-regular column at wewantinsanity.com.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have anything else coming down the pike, you know, in the works right now on the horizon?
Not anything that I'm currently working on. We'll see what pops up. But
kind of in the... maybe the early stages of thinking of projects?
I'm not even to that stage at this point, Scott. I'm Whatever happens, I stop putting a whole lot of pressure on myself when it comes to writing. Whatever happens, happens. If it's good, it's good.
Well, we look forward to seeing some of your good work come out. I can guarantee you that on this program, because you never fail to deliver, in my opinion, when it comes to stuff. So before we let you go, the folks want to know more about you. Obviously, they can visit wewantinsanity.com. Where else can they find you online?
There's the Dan Crocker fan page that Aaron started.
On Facebook?
On Facebook. I haven't done it yet, but now that I'm feeling a little better and trying to get back out into the world, probably going to start Twitter back up. So yeah, be on the lookout for that, I reckon.
Will do, indeed. Dan, it is always a pleasure to chat with you.
You too, Scott.
Doesn't matter what time of the day or what day it is always good to chat with you and catch up, my friend. Well, you enjoy your holiday season, my friend.
You too.
And you take care of yourself, man, and enjoy your day.
All right. Thanks for the interview, Scott.
All right.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.